Othos and Dragal were collectively known as the Northern Kingdoms. The ruling families of all three were related to each other and had firm control over their lands. All three kingdoms held a feudal tradition, going back almost to the time of the Shattering. Knights and armed men swore fealty to local lords, who in turn were sworn to serve their king or queen. There was no slavery to the north, but only nobles could own land. The peasants who worked the fields were allowed to keep a share of what they produced and did enjoy certain rights, but were forced to rely on their liege lords for protection and enforcement of the law. The northern kingdoms were blessed with fertile soil and plenty of water. There were thick forests, marshes, abundant farmlands, and thriving towns and cities. Lothos also had vast iron deposits and forged large quantities of iron and much smaller amounts of steel. They were rich lands, and Alderaath had a profitable trading relationship with Lothos and Wyleth. The growing influence of the Whites was stirring up trouble, especially in Dragal, where the king was weak and easily influenced. Because of the White Mages, trade with Dragal was almost non-existent. Abura and Drasia were also feudal kingdoms, but there the ruling families were not as well established. They often struggled to enforce their rule over their nobles. Some of the local lords barely acknowledged any sort of fealty to the crown. They tried to rule over their lands autonomously, and often did not bother to send any taxes to the capital. Drasia had only just recently come out of a long civil war. The old ruling family had been exterminated, and a new one installed. The new king had to be very cautious as to how much he demanded of some of his retainers. Many still considered him a usurper. The lands to the south were arid and mountainous. The border region was a desert called the Barrens that was especially unforgiving. The barony of Lemur was ruled by Baron Artemis Fabry. The Fabry were the only nobles in Lemur. They'd annihilated all the others generations ago. The Baron saw the country as being his own personal property and used his extended family to rule over it and drain every last bit of money. Every tax collector was a Fabry, and every Fabry was a tax collector. Galicia was the poorest of all the lands that bordered Alderaath. Its territory was mountainous and dry, with the people living in scattered villages, scratching at an existence with sheep and goat herding and a little subsistence farming. The country had no one ruler. Each individual village or settlement was cut off from the others by the rugged terrain. All authority was local. The land was overrun by goblin and orc tribes who raided each other and the humans. It was perhaps the poorest and most wretched spot in the world. It was, however, a wonderful source of slaves. Rutenia also had many goblins, orcs, and other monsters. The land south of the Barrens was a bit more hospitable, with hills and lowlands in the place of mountains. Here various clans held power over stretches of territory. Loyalty was to the family or clan, and battles were always personal. In Rutenia, feuds and vendettas could last for generations, and even the most minor slight could be cause for bloodshed. Vizcaya was an anomaly. The people who lived there had very bizarre notions about power and government. There, the commoners held political power. They practiced a strange form of organized anarchy that was referred to as democracy. The people there had no respect for blood, and did not permit any noble titles or special privileges. They loudly insisted that all men were equal, and ought to be treated that way. The idea was so patently ridiculous, Waldo couldn't imagine how anyone could be blind enough to actually believe it, to say nothing of actually having a nation based around it. Waldo could only imagine it as mobs roaming the street and claiming to be a government. Oddly enough, Vizcaya was actually quite prosperous. They were a center for artisans and trade. It made no sense, but it was so. Where to go was the first decision Waldo had to make. It was funny. Even though he'd been preparing for this his entire life, he had never thought about the specifics. There were advantages and disadvantages to whatever choice he made. The northern kingdoms were rich with many towns and cities. There were wild goblins that he could try to capture. The problem with going north was the fact that there were knights and the occasional white mage infesting the countryside. Despite trading with each other, dark mages were feared and hated. Anyone with black robes might suddenly be attacked, as his brother Roland had apparently discovered. Abura and Drasia had the same issues, while being poorer. By contrast, in Lemur, the knights were little more than armed tax collectors. All the southern lands were poor, with monsters running free. Lemur had made a lot of coin by selling slaves to Alderaath, and the local authorities would likely look the other way at anything he wanted to do there. In Rutenia and Galicia, people only worried about themselves and were not about to try and fight a dark mage unless they had to. In any of the lands to the south, he would be at liberty to try and capture as many monsters as he could. Capturing an orc or goblin was perilous, but not as dangerous as facing a knight. With luck, he could capture and make a contract with three or more of them, and that would be one task completed. In Vizcaya, there were few monsters roaming the wild, and the people there actually expected dark mages to tamely submit to their laws. They really were filled with strange ideas. He had individual maps for all 9 nations. He picked up the one for Galicia. It was commonly accepted that candidates who felt confident in their power or really wanted to impress went north. Those who were less certain or less ambitious usually went south. All of his brothers and sisters had traveled north. "I think my best option," Waldo thought, "is to go south and try and contract some monsters. I need 3, but I can always get more than that. If I have 10 or 20 goblins and orcs in my service, that'll be a fine start." There was no limit to how many monsters you could have under contract. The advantages with using familiars were that they were permanently bound to your will. They could be summoned instantly, without a circle. They were bound to obey their master's every command. They could not lie or inflict harm on their master, even when they hated him. Making the contract could be done against the monster's will. All that was required was physical contact between master and servant as the binding spell was cast. The servants kept their free will and often openly hated their masters, but they were bound regardless. This could lead to trouble if a master was careless. Familiars could tell lies of omission and could find subtle ways to cause trouble. Contracts could not be made between members of the same race, so it was impossible to make a human a familiar. You could also not make a contract with the undead. Contracts could only be made with living beings of other races. Once a monster was contracted to you, you were also responsible for feeding and providing for it just as you were with slaves. Waldo knew he would have to overpower and capture the first orc or goblin, then force a contract on it. After that, he would have a servant to do his fighting for him, and things would be much simpler. Waldo was nervous at the prospect of that first run-in. Maybe he could set up a trap where it would be caught by some hidden wards. That was likely his best option. Galicia would be the place to start his quest. Once he had enough monsters under his control, he would have to travel east to seek out a knight. After that, well, he had no idea where to go after that. "One step at a time," he thought. "Just this will be more than hard enough." Waldo was carefully studying the maps. He would need to have plenty of water with him while he crossed the barrens. It would not be out of the realm of possibility to be attacked there. He was going over the different scenarios in his mind when he heard a soft rap at his door. Waldo knew immediately who it had to be. His brother was not stupid enough to announce himself. His mother never came to his room. A slave would knock once and announce himself. The undead never knocked. They weren't very big on courtesy. "Come in, Enver." The door to his room opened and slowly swung wide. There in the doorway was a rail-thin man, barely 5 feet tall, who might have weighed 90 pounds. You could make out the lines of his skull beneath the slightly yellow skin. His fingers were long and bony thin, and his wrists looked like they would break off if shaken hard. He had short black hair, and was dressed in a tailor-made suit, with a vest and long coat draped around his thin shoulders. His eyes were blood-red and slitted. 2 long canine fangs dominated his mouth, and made him appear just a bit more menacing. Despite eyes and fangs, he did not really look all that dangerous. He actually looked rather frail. Waldo knew better. Except for his mother, this was the most dangerous person who lived here. Enver cast his eyes down on the bare stone floor. There were no markings there to see.
"It always amazes me how many protective wards and trap spells you have in your room," Enver said in that slightly superior, mocking tone he always used.
Being what he was, he could sense the magic, though all the runes and inscriptions were inverted and hidden from view. "Do you think I'd be able to sleep at night without them? I swear, zombies have short-term memory loss. Walter keeps trying to sneak in here."
"You should have destroyed it long ago."
The condescension was just a little more blatant.
"It's hard to believe you are her son. Why she let such a weak, defective creature as you live past childhood is a mystery to me."
"Did you come here for something, or did you just want to get in a few more insults before I leave?" Enver's head shook in mock disappointment.
"No need to be hostile. Have I ever harmed you?"
"You threatened to kill me all the time when I was growing up."
"Well, I am a vampire. You looked like such a tasty treat when you were little."
His inky lips peeled back in a ghoulish grin.
"Truth to tell, I would still like to have some of your blood."
"If you ever tried that, I would kill you," Waldo said and meant it. He felt sympathy for the slaves, and even for Walter. Enver was different. The vampire had tormented him constantly until he took on the robes, and he had done it just for his own amusement.
"I have never actually harmed you," Enver reminded him.
"Only because my mother gave you a direct order to never touch any of her children."
"More is the pity. It's boring only being able to torture the slaves.
What do you want? If you're just here to annoy me, then get out. I have a lot of things to do.
You will be leaving in the morning, so I will not see you off. I do hate how I am in the daytime. I can't tell you how sad that makes me.
Enver looked at him with those inhuman eyes. Waldo could see the amusement there. He only took pleasure in the pain of others.
You know, Waldo, I want to help you survive your first quest.
Reaching into a pocket, he drew out a folded piece of paper. Knowing better than to step any further into the room, he gave a flick of his bony wrist and tossed it across the floor to land near Waldo's feet. Waldo looked at the paper suspiciously and made no move to touch it.
What is it?
A gift, Ember said with a bloodless smile.
Waldo did not reach for it.
You don't trust me?
Why would I?
Enver spread his hands. I have no reason to deceive you, and I would gain nothing from your death.
Except a good laugh. Enver gave a sly shrug and did not deny it.
It would please me more to see you return. You have always been my favorite victim, and I do miss your tears and screams.
Waldo's eyes flickered to the wand lying on his bed. He'd never killed anyone, but he thought he could destroy Enver without any regret. When he was a child, a vampire had often cornered him and threatened to rip out his throat and drink him dry. Waldo had been forced to watch favorite slaves be tortured and slowly killed. Enver would never try to quiet them. He enjoyed their cries and pleas for mercy as he tore into their flesh and greedily drank their blood. He always made it last as long as he could. As they were being killed, the slaves would always turn to him for mercy. Those pleas had always bothered Waldo more than the actual killings. Slaves were common and easy to replace. The way they would look at him, though, the way they would beg him for help, it had given Waldo nightmares. He'd gone to his mother and asked her to make Enver stop. His mother had been unhappy with him. She told him to accept it or find the means to deal with it. A dark mage could not be affected by his victim's cries. Mother forbade Enver from harming or ever touching him, but she didn't care about nightmares. In her eyes, it would only make him stronger. Waldo eventually learned not to show any favor on the slaves. He learned not to care when they died in front of him, and Enver finally grew bored with that game. The vampire would then threaten to kill him, and would make a point of bending iron bars or crushing stones in his bony little hands.
I'll kill you, and drink every last drop of your sweet blood.
Enver would growl and approach him menacingly. The vampire wanted to hear screams and see Waldo shaking in terror. Waldo had learned how to deal with him by the time he was apprenticed. Who are you trying to scare? You can't touch me, and we both know it. Waldo would then walk past him, daring Enver to prove him wrong. The vampire never did, and it made the monster furious. Waldo knew that if Enver were not bound by his mother's command, the vampire would tear his throat out in an instant. The day his mother died, the contract she had made would be broken, and Enver would be free. On that day, if they were both still alive, one of them would die. Waldo knew and accepted that. If Enver turned out to be the first person he ever killed, he would be very happy.
So you want me to live so you can kill me yourself one day?
Exactly, Enver smiled. I've dreamed of tearing out your throat for so long. I would simply hate to be denied that pleasure.
Waldo knew that was true, and oddly enough, it did give Enver a reason to want to help. Reaching down, he slowly and carefully unfolded the paper. He saw it was a map of Lothos, with a path marked on it, and three distinctive X's.
What's this? A treasure map?
Of a sort. If you follow that, it will lead you to three great monsters.
Great monsters? Waldo said, disbelieving. There were 10 races that were classified as great monsters due to their superior power. They were dragons, vampires, giants, ogres, werewolves, trolls, succubi, griffins, medusas, and elementals. Capturing a great monster and making a contract with one was a challenge even for an experienced dark mage. For a novice to capture one, let alone three... Waldo tossed the paper aside.
You must think me a complete idiot. Either the map is a fake, or you really are trying to get me killed.
Not at all, Enver said. You cannot return until you have made a contract with at least three monsters, correct? These three will be of far greater use to you than some lazy goblins would be.
My mother told you about that?
Why are you surprised? She always shares everything with me. I am her trusted confidant.
You're her familiar.
Enver gave a careless shrug.
six of one, half a dozen of the other. The point is that once I learned of that, I drew up this map for your benefit. If you can capture these three creatures, they will be a major help to you in your quest. Who knows, you might actually survive, though it is unlikely.
Just overpowering some goblins or orcs is going to be hard enough. You expect me to take on giants and vampires?
Enver's lips quirked and twisted in a silent laugh.
Ho-ho, I think you might manage with these monsters.
Waldo knew that tone much too well. It was the one Enver always preferred before performing some particularly cruel jest.
Just what are you up to?
I am simply trying to help you survive in the hopes of eventually making a meal of you.
He turned back to the door.
I've given you my help. You may accept it, or not, as you wish. I will not be seeing you off in the morning, so this will be goodbye. I wish you success, and will hope for your return.
He flashed a cruel and mocking smile.
Though I won't expect it, even if you do follow my advice.
Enver left, closing the door behind him. The vampire's visit had completely ruined his mood. He didn't need a reminder that this quest was nearly impossible. Picking up the maps of the southern lands, he went through the motions of trying to select which one he should visit first. All the while, he kept glancing at the paper lying there on the floor. Waldo did finally pick it up and look at it again, more out of curiosity than anything else. Lothos was the richest of the northern kingdoms, and also the one most infested with knights.
Maybe he really does want to get me killed.
Contemptuously, he crumpled up the treasure map and tossed it in the trash. He went back to the southern maps, and studied them more seriously as he packed for his journey. Waldo got no sleep that night. His backpack was ready except for the water skins and travel rations. His spellbook was in there, while his wand would be in one of the many pockets sewn into his robes. It would be hidden, but always in reach. He'd finally decided to go south, to Galicia. He would stay there just long enough to make contracts with 10 weak monsters. It would not be much, but it would be the most he could hope for. With that done, he would move on to trying to defeat a knight. If he managed that much, he would then try to figure out what would come next. When Waldo really stopped to think about it, the requirements of his first quest did seem impossible. Rationally, no one would ever expect a young, inexperienced mage to have any hope of acquiring a dragon's egg. Capturing any three monsters would be a great accomplishment, defeating a knight an even greater one. For someone lacking combat magic, those feats were already nearing unbelievable. Dragons were the fiercest and most terrible of all monsters. Their lairs were always well hidden and far from human civilization. Just discovering one would be an immense challenge. Sneaking into one unnoticed? Stealing an egg? Escaping with one alive? When Waldo tried to imagine the odds against it, the number he came up with was depressingly large. Since he couldn't sleep, he spent a lot of the early morning hours just staring out his window. Like every night, the world was complete blackness. From the skies above to the city below, no flicker of light marred the perfect dark. The only light was from the ever-churning volcanoes and the slow-moving rivers of lava of the forge. They were many miles away, but were clear through the pitch black. Waldo just stood there for hours, gazing at the rivers of fire shining through the dark. It was just so beautiful. When the skies began to shift from utter darkness to the tiniest hint of gray, Waldo knew the time had come. He would have a last meal with his family, gather his food and water, and then set out on foot. The idea of leaving not just the castle, but everything he knew, scared him. Down deep, he was afraid that he was as weak and useless as most had always thought. For all his brave words, he knew he would probably never return. Death was not something to be feared. Waldo knew it was a failing that he could not think of his own death without a cold knot in his stomach. Had the others been afraid to die? The slaves always begged and screamed, but they were only slaves. Waldo was thinking of his siblings, those brothers and sisters who had sat at the table with him, the ones he had always been compared to, and to whom he'd always been found wanting. Had any of them ever been scared like this? They'd all been so strong and sure of themselves. Each one had fought to be heir, and had been a true dark mage. He didn't think any of them could have ever been afraid. Along with the fear, there was something else. In his life, he had stepped outside the castle walls on only a handful of occasions. What he knew of the shattered lands he'd mainly read in books or heard about from his mother. Now he was going to go and see it for himself. The idea of exploring and facing dangers was exciting. For the first time in his life, he was going to be on his own. It was a thrilling thought. Excitement and terror warred inside his heart. Before heading down to breakfast, there was one more thing he needed to do first. "Sister, will you come and talk to me?" He waited as the colors swirled and Gwen took form. His sister appeared before him, throat slashed and skin stark white. She was looking at him with just a hint of amusement.
"Hello, little brother," she said in her gasping voice. "Have you come to say farewell?"
Waldo nodded. "I'm leaving on my first quest today. I didn't want to go without saying goodbye to you." Gwen gave a slight nod.
"I will miss you until you return."
"You sound very sure I'll come back."
"I have told you. One day you will lead the family. Trust your big sister."
Waldo looked at her longingly. He wanted any kind of hope. "Will I do well in Galicia?" Gwen slowly shook her head.
"You are not going to Galicia."
"Yes, I am," Waldo said. "I'm surprised you wouldn't know that." Maybe she couldn't see everything that was going to happen. That was not a comforting thought. She shook her head again and spoke with rigid certainty.
"You will not travel to Galicia, or Lemur, or Rutenia. If you go south, you will die. If you go to Vizcaya, or Abura, or Dracia, you will die. If you go to Wylef, you will die. If you go to Dragal, you will die."
Waldo felt the ice in his stomach start to crawl up his throat. She had named off 8 of the 9 places he could travel to and announced they were death sentences.
"Are you saying I have to go to Lothos? Isn't it the most dangerous of the Northern Kingdoms?"
She made no reply. She simply stared back at him. Thinking of going to Lothos, something immediately occurred to him.
"Wait, are you saying Enver was being serious last night? Are you telling me I should actually follow his treasure map?" "Listen to me very carefully now, brother," Gwen said in a somber voice.
Waldo gave a nod and paid her his full attention. When Gwen asked for him to take note, it was always something important. Gwen spoke in a rhythmic voice.
"Moon rises and sun sets. Day turns to night and summer to winter. 5 winters shall pass before you shall return. Long will your journey be, and difficult your challenges. 3 shall follow you, claws, horns, and fangs devoted to your service. They will journey with you to the Forgotten Keep, where you shall find your treasure. Your return shall be glorious, but turn to ash in a moon's turn. When brother, sister, and mother are gone, you shall stand above all others. What is broken, you will make whole."
When his sister finished, Waldo just stood there, staring back at her. Obviously, this was another one of her prophecies, but he really wasn't sure what to make of it. A lot of it made no sense to him. Her words did seem to suggest that he would return in 5 years' time. He also took special note of, 3 shall follow you.
"Are you telling me I should follow Enver's advice, then? You're saying he was actually serious last night?"
Gwendolyn tilted her head to the side, and blood spurted from her wound.
"I've given you my help. You may accept it, or not, as you wish."
Waldo stiffened.
"If you want me to follow Enver's map, why don't you just say so?"
Waldo asked. "Why does all your advice have to come in riddles? Why can't you just tell me what is going to happen?"
"I am dead, little brother. You have to grant me a bit of fun."
"I'm glad I amuse you."
"You always have," Gwen responded with a rasping laugh.
Waldo shook his head. "Thank you for helping me, sister. You've always been very kind to me."
"If you're going to insult me, I'm leaving," Gwen scolded.
As her form began to dissolve, she looked at her brother with real affection.
"I will not say goodbye to you, little brother. We will meet again. Whatever happens, no matter how hard, do not give in to despair. Remember that you are destined to return home again, in glory and in blood."
His sister was gone, and the mirror once more was empty.
"Thank you, sister."
Waldo hurried back to his room to recover the treasure map he had thrown away. Enver's map was taken out of the trash, neatly folded, and slipped into a pocket. Waldo would study it later. His plans from last night were now tossed aside, but all that really meant was that he would take the north road out of Alter rather than the south. Hurrying along a hallway, Waldo came to a halt and glanced towards a partially open door to his right.
"Really? Do you still want to play this stupid game, even today?"
The door flung open, and Walter rushed out.
"Repulso,"
Waldo waved a hand. Walter had not made it more than 2 steps before magical forces slammed him into the wall and pinned him there.
"Damn you. Why can't I kill you?"
"Because I can always sense you."
He'd always had the ability to sense the undead. It was a rare talent and sometimes ran in his family. Waldo had told his mother, but no one else about it.
"I've told you before," Waldo said. "No matter how well you hide, there's no way to disguise that stink."
"It's all your fault. All of this is your fault. When you're dead, I'll be heir again, and I'll have everything that should be mine."
Waldo wanted to laugh at the sheer stupidity of it.
"Yes, I've heard that before."
"You stole my place!"
Waldo was sick of being the target of his brother's hate, sick of the idiocy and the mindlessness. Since this was the last time he would be seeing Walter until his, hoped-for, return, he decided to go ahead and say a few things.
"The reason I took your place is because you're dead. The dead cannot rule the living. You know that."
"If you were gone, she would have to make me heir. There's no one else."
"Wrong. There are other branches of the family. Mother would choose one of them."
"No, she wouldn't," Walter denied. "She would choose me. I'm her son. She would never pick some cousin or uncle or nephew she hardly knows."
Waldo shook his head. "Whoever leads the family must be able to make contracts, perform the greater magics, and provide an heir. A zombie can't do any of those things. Even if Mother did choose you, the council would never allow the choice to stand. Your chance to be heir ended the day Grandfather killed you. I never had anything to do with it. Mother only put me on her right because she had to. I didn't do anything to replace you, and even if you killed me, it wouldn't change anything."
"Liar,"
Walter hissed, and thrashed about trying to somehow free himself.
"You were always just like the rest, always plotting to destroy me and take what should be mine. I know it was you. I know it, I know it, I know it."
Watching the pointless display of fury only made Waldo shake his head.
"You're pathetic."
Waldo left with him there. "Goodbye, brother." Walter screamed after him, but Waldo didn't bother to listen. As was tradition, Waldo had a big breakfast before setting out. His mother said very little, and did not ask him what his plans were. Waldo could remember her acting the same whenever the others went out. The kitchen slaves brought him 2 full water skins and a pack filled with jerky, nuts, dried bread, and other travel food. The slaves spoke well wishes and hoped for a safe return while keeping their eyes lowered. When the meal was finally finished, he put on his backpack and water skins and proceeded out of the castle proper, to the courtyard and towards the main gate. His back was bending forward just a bit under the weight. Having to travel so many miles on foot, toting everything on his back was going to be wearying. The morning sky was a barely visible ash gray. His mother was the only one to accompany him. When his brothers and sisters were still alive, they would come and see whoever was leaving. Since Gwen and Walter could not join them, it was just Mother. He wondered what it was like for her to be sending the last of her children off on a first quest. It had to be hard, especially given the circumstances. Whatever she was feeling, his mother gave no sign. Her face was rigidly set, and her demeanor utterly calm. She was certainly not behaving like this might be the last time she ever saw him.
"I will definitely come back," Waldo said, as they came to the open gate.
The wooden drawbridge was down over the dry moat with its rusting iron spikes. Beyond was a rutted dirt road that led down to the city of Alter. From there, he would follow the north road and begin his journey. Now that the moment had really come, Waldo felt scared. He looked back at the dreary castle and the undead shuffling along the battlements. He looked out at the volcanoes in the distance, spewing ash into the sky and bleeding lava into the rivers of fire. The morning breeze was heavy with the stench of sulfur. How he would miss this place. His mother looked at him, and there was a miniature smile beneath solemn eyes.
"I am sure you will," she agreed.
Reaching into her cloak, she produced a leather sack that jingled in her hands.
"Take this. It is 100 gold coins. I made sure they are all foreign mint. You will only find ducats and denarii, no gold skulls. It's all I can do for you."
"Isn't this against the rules for a first quest?"
"Oh, it's completely against the rules, but then so is setting impossible conditions. Now go ahead and take it.
The whole point of the first quest is to prove yourself as a dark mage. You're not supposed to take anything with you beyond the necessities."
"That's how it normally goes," Lilith agreed. "But if the council is going to bend the rules, I am too."
"Did you ever give any of the others money when they went out?"
"No," Lilith admitted. "But they all went on normal quests."
Waldo looked closely at the purse his mother was holding. Not having to worry about acquiring gold would make things easier. He shook his head.
"I can't take this."
"Why not?"
"Because it's against the rules, and I want to face this the way I'm supposed to. The way the others did." "The others went on normal first quests," Lilith reminded him. "For them it was a fair test of their abilities and their courage, so I didn't give them any extra help. Your situation is completely different.
Waldo again shook his head.
I want to do this the right way, so that when I return, you can know I succeeded on my own and be proud of me.
His mother blinked.
You really mean that? You honestly don't want this gold?
I mean it. His mother stood there a moment, still holding the leather sack.
You are very brave, my son.
Thank you, mother.
You are an idiot, but a brave idiot.
She grabbed him by a shoulder and roughly turned him around. He could feel her tugging and opening up his backpack.
Mother, what are you doing? What else? I'm putting the gold in your pack. But I said I didn't want it.
I heard you. Why do you think I called you an idiot? He opened his mouth to try and argue, but his mother cut him off.
What did I always teach you about following rules?
Waldo sighed.
That rules only matter when you know you'll get caught.
Exactly. Results are all that count, my son. Just succeed and come home. That is all I care about.
We are corpse lovers. We are bound by no laws.
That was the family motto. Not even the ones made by the council? Finished, Lilith tied shut his backpack.
We have to follow their dictates, of course, at least as far as they can see. You don't ever need to worry about what I think of you. I am only sorry I cannot do more.
It's okay, Mother. It makes me happy just to know you would defy the council for me.
Well, of course I would, his mother said, and placed an affectionate hand on his cheek. After all, you are my son, and more important to me than anything else.
Waldo blushed, and a simple happiness filled his heart, and pushed away all the fear that had been there just moments ago. His mother had never really shown him a lot of warmth growing up.
Thank you, Mother.
She gave a single nod and withdrew her hand.
I will pray the dark powers to watch over you and see you safely home. I will offer 100 sacrifices.
I would be grateful for the prayers, but please don't make any sacrifices for my sake. I've never liked having people die because of me, even if they are only slaves.
Lilith gave an amused shake of her head. You have always been a bit strange, my son, but if that is your wish, I will honor it.
Thank you. Goodbye, Mother. I will see you again.
Goodbye, my son. I will wait for your return no matter how long it may be.
Taking a deep breath, Waldo took a step out onto the drawbridge and began his journey. Chapter 3. Melissa. Peabody was a small village in northern Lothos. It was located near the marshlands that were infested by goblins. Thousands of the vile creatures festered there, living in their filth and squalor. They kept mostly to themselves, but small packs would often go out to do a little hunting. It was said that human flesh was a goblin's favorite food. There were forts and strongholds all along the frontier, manned by local militia and the king's troops. They did what they could. The soldiers patrolled constantly and killed or captured any goblins they came across. The men couldn't actually go into the bogs. Those who did never came out again. Every few years, the goblins would come out in force and go on a rampage. Whole families would be slaughtered and eaten. Villages and forts would be burned to the ground. When that happened, the king would raise the levies and lead the army into battle. The goblins would always be crushed and sent fleeing back into the marshes. The army would follow after in hopes of being rid of them once and for all. It never happened. In their bogs, they knew how to disappear when they wanted to. The army would burn down the thatch huts they found and kill a few stragglers, but most of the goblins would simply vanish and be impossible to find. After a couple of weeks, the men would start to complain and want to go home. The army would disband, and the cycle would continue again.
They lack commitment, she said to herself. You can never accomplish anything lasting without commitment.
This world belonged to man. Monsters. All monsters were an abomination, a disease that needed curing. And the only real cure was to purge them from this earth with fire and steel. It was a plain and obvious truth. If you asked most people, they would agree with you. Yes, get rid of all the monsters and the world would be a much better place. If words alone were enough, the world would have been purified long ago. The problem was that most were unwilling to pay the price. Creating a new age of peace and justice would not come easily. Ridding the world of monsters demanded tremendous sacrifice of both blood and treasure. Most of the nations were unwilling. They fought when they had to, when the danger was obvious, but then sought accommodation rather than continue fighting to achieve a lasting victory. There were monsters all across the Shattered Lands, in almost every country. Most rulers chose to compromise with them and tolerate their existence within limits, much as they would accept a certain amount of corruption and crime.
Compromise,
she spat, as if to get the taste of that foul word out of her mouth.
There can be no negotiation or agreement with evil. What is just is just. What is wicked. There can be no compromise. Those who do not understand that must be taught the error of their ways.
Like every village near the marshes, Peabody was surrounded by a wooden stockade. There was a single watchtower that was manned day and night. The people here and in other villages lived in fear because their king was not strong enough to do what was truly necessary. As she approached, the people inside the village proper all quickly noticed. It was not surprising. People in white robes were a rare sight, especially in a place like this. A small crowd of 20 to 30 gathered near the gate, openly gawking at her. She was used to this reaction and did not hold it against them. A white mage always drew stares and made people nervous. Her hood was down so that they could get a clear look at her face. She was attractive and exotic for this part of the world, with the blonde hair and yellow eyes. She came to a halt before the villagers and offered them a slight bow.
"Hello. I am Mistress Melissa Cornwall, an archmage of the Order of Mist."
The locals looked nervously at one another and turned their focus to a burly man with a salt-and-pepper beard. The local chieftain, she thought. Stroking his beard, he took a hesitant step forward and gave her a much lower bow than she had offered.
"Greetings to you, Mistress Cornwall. Welcome to Peabody. My name is Lorimer. It has been a long time since a white mage has visited us. To be honest, I'm not sure one ever has."
"Well, there are only so many of us outside of Avalon."
Still stroking his beard, Lorimer looked around, as if asking for help. Everyone remained silent.
"Well then, Mistress Cornwall, is there some special reason you've come to visit us?"
"I was told there was an attack by a very strong monster in this area. I've come to rid you of it."
Her words produced an excited murmur. Lorimer took on a stern air. He motioned for silence, and everyone stood quieted.
"You heard right. There was an awful attack 2 weeks ago at the Hampton Place. The whole family, father, mother, and 4 children were all done in. We've all been very nervous about it."
There were unhappy nods and folk drawing circles over their hearts to ward off evil.
"I would be happy to deal with this monster for you."
"For how much?" Lorimer asked. "I do not mean to be rude, mistress, but we are a poor village and do not have much in the way of coin. We might be able to pay you with a fat sow or some chickens, but if you were hoping for silver or gold, we have none."
Smiling, she spread her hands. "I require no payment. I am more than happy to do this without charge."
That caused fresh whispers and had Lorimer once more stroking his beard.
"When do mages ever do anything for free? We've had to hire one from time to time to make it rain or help us drive off some wolves. We always get charged at least 4 healthy pigs or a cow in her prime."
"But you have never dealt with a white mage before, have you?"
"No, like I said, you are the first any of us have ever seen."
"The members of my order do not work for money. We serve a higher cause. I will destroy this monster for you because it is the right thing to do. All I ask for in return is that you remember."
She could see Lorimer had his doubts, but the villagers were clearly willing to accept her help. Eventually it was decided that they would agree, and Lorimer would personally act as her guide to the Hampton Place. Before setting out, the chieftain insisted on putting on a worn leather jerkin and got a spear with a sharpened stone tip. Melissa had tried to explain it was unnecessary, that she would keep both of them from harm.
"When Lord Durmore heard about the attack, he sent a squad of guards to go look for what did it. 10 strong and healthy men, all with iron or bows. It ambushed them. A huge beast, they said. Skin green as moss and big as a bear. Their arrows wouldn't pierce it. Their swords and axes wouldn't cut it. It tore them limb from limb, the way a man can tear apart a rabbit."
He shuddered.
"I see."
He gaped at her.
"How can you be calm? I'm a man, and I will tell you I'm afraid."
"There is no reason to fear. I have fought many monsters. I'm sure I can deal with this one when we find it."
He began to stroke his beard.
"You really expect no payment for this?"
Melissa shook her head.
"Then why? Why are you doing this for people you don't even know?"
"Because it is the right thing to do, and will make this world a little better place."
Her demeanor was calm and at ease.
"I know the sorts of stories they tell about my order, and why people fear us, but I assure you, innocent folk like you have nothing to be afraid of. We exist to protect and serve people like you."
He hesitated.
"Lord Durmore doesn't think so."
"Those in power usually fear change, no matter how beneficial or necessary that change may be."
"Why do things need to change? They're all right."
"Tell that to the Hamptons or to the soldiers who didn't return."
"Well, I'm not saying the world's perfect or anything, But what can you do about it?
Unite the shattered lands to bring unity. Grant all people everywhere the protection of the law to bring justice. Kill every last monster and servant of evil to bring peace. That is what you can do. That is what my order believes in.
That's a bit much, don't you think? No one could ever do all that.
No one person could, but I am only one member of the order, and every one of us is dedicated to working towards this ideal. It is what I believe in, and what I gladly give my life for. Unity, justice, peace.
Forgive me for saying this, mistress, but it will never happen. The world's too big a place, no matter how many of you there are. Things have always been the way they are.
It will not happen in my lifetime, but even if it takes 1,000 years, it will happen.
Lorimer stared, obviously not comprehending.
Why would you spend your life working for something you know you will never get to see?
Because I know that all my sacrifices will not be in vain. That is enough for me.
It was early summer, and the lands they passed through were all green and vibrant. The fields held wheat, rye, and other crops. On gently rolling hills, cows and other animals grazed. Melissa noticed that everyone she saw was armed. The people clearly noticed her as she and Lorimer passed them. Most of them stopped working, just to stand there and gape. A few drew circles over their hearts.
They don't understand, she thought sadly.
Why did so many fear the Order? She understood their reputation was not pristine. The Order was not above committing violence when it was for the greater good. Many of the rulers in the Shattered Lands were corrupt and had to be dealt with harshly. Kings and noblemen who stood in the way of progress had good reason to be afraid.
Our ends are truly honorable and worthy. They justify even the bloodiest means.
The common people had nothing to fear. It was for their sake that the Order had been founded. They wanted to protect the ordinary folk and help them lead good, decent lives. The people didn't understand that because their rulers deliberately lied to them. They spread false rumors and tried to paint every action in the worst possible light. Wherever white mages went, those in power always tried to interfere with their good work. That was true here in Lothos as well. Melissa was here to recruit someone and then travel to the local court. She would try to bring some of the officials there over to the right side.
We're here, Lorimer told her.
He was clutching his spear against his chest. They had gone about 4 or 5 miles from the village and were at a small farm like all the ones they had passed. The home was set back from the road behind a field of wheat.
I am sure the monster has long since gone, Lorimer muttered.
You have done enough. You can wait here while I take a look.
A man can't leave a woman unprotected.
Backwards notions, but these people haven't been taught better yet. As you like.
She entered the wheat field with him close by her heel. What she found was a simple cottage with a thatch roof. The door had been smashed to kindling. A sudden breeze brought the smell of rotting meat. Lorimer rubbed at his nose and shifted from one foot to another. Melissa calmly drew her hands together and cast a spell.
Taranos sevel, monstri desu, noratel esaki esavaratos.
To her eyes, a reddish glow began to emanate from inside the cottage. Reaching into one of the many pockets of her robe, she took out her wand.
It's here.
What?
He tightened his grip on his spear and spread his feet to get a solid stance.
Are you sure?
Yes.
It only took a moment before a massive creature with skin the color of moss and 2 yellow tusks jutting out of its jaw crouched through the doorway. When it stood to its full height, it could have reached up and tapped the top of the roof. Its entire body was muscle, and it was looking them over hungrily.
Fresh meat for Tula. Tula happy.
It began to stride towards them.
So it was an ogre.
Melissa calmly pointed her wand.
Everos ventus, escorti.
Lorimer gasped as he saw the air above Melissa's head warp and solidify. He could make out 4 separate semicircles hanging above her, each about 4 feet across.
Now you pay for your crimes, you disgusting abomination.
She flicked her wand. The 4 wind blades flew, covering the distance between them in the flicker of an eye. The hide, that could defeat arrows and sharpened iron, was no match at all for an archmage's spell. They cut clean through, slicing not just the skin, but the flesh and bone beneath. 1 blade took off the monster's head along with most of its right shoulder. A 2nd cut through his chest about 2/3 of the way up. Another chopped the legs off just above the knees. The last one severed the left arm from the rest. It was so quick and clean there was not even any time for cries of pain. Lorimer actually saw a look of surprise on the monster's face as his head was in the air. Blood gushed from the neck and the other cuts. Then all the pieces just fell to the ground in one massive bloody heap. It was just that quick. One moment he was getting ready to die, the next, the beast was nothing but bloody chunks. He bent over and threw up. As he emptied his stomach, he felt Melissa's hand gently patting his back. "Are you all right? I know it can be a bit much if you're not used to it." He straightened, feeling ashamed.
"I am sorry."
"Nothing to be sorry about. As I said, it can be hard to take the first time."
"How many times have you done this?"
"Killed a monster. More times than I can count. It's one of the things I am best at." He shook his head. "Well, now that my work here is done, please go back to your village and tell everyone that they are safe."
"Aren't you coming with me? Let us throw you a feast in your honor. That is the least we can do."
She shook her head. "No, I didn't come here for feasts any more than I did for coin. I have to go and meet someone I hope to recruit into the order. Please go back and tell them what you saw, and ask them to remember that it was a white mage who came and helped when they were in need."
"I will," he promised. "Is that really all you want?"
"Yes, it is enough for me." She gave him a polite nod of her head. "Goodbye, Lorimer. I wish you and your people the blessings of unity, justice, and peace." With that, she started towards the road and her next task. Chapter 4 Blue Skies and Sunshine. The city of Alter was the heart of Alteroth. Located near the volcanoes of the Forge and the Rivers of Fire, the seven great families had founded the city and built their castles here. Originally, they had come to establish a sanctuary and escape the persecution and mistreatment of their native lands. They soon discovered that the lands near the Forge were a treasure trove. Gold, silver, iron, and precious gems could all be found in abundance. With slaves and undead to work vast mines, the wealth poured in. The riches of the Forge allowed them to build their ideal city and begin raising armies to conquer neighboring lands. The skies above Alter were always overcast with ash, and at night the only light would come from the Forge and from the Rivers of Fire. Nothing grew here, not a tree, not a shrub, not a blade of grass. There was always a trace of sulfur in the air, and when it rained, the rain was black and filthy. Undead soldiers marched along the wide and perfectly straight streets. The people who lived here obeyed every law without question. The members of the seven families were the only ones truly free. Anyone who wore the black robes could walk the earth like a god. They had the power of life and death and answered only to the council and the families. Waldo had spent all his life in Alter, residing inside Castle Corpselover. Everyone agreed that Alter was the most wonderful place in all the world. He never doubted it. His travels would only prove just how wonderful and special his home city truly was. The very first thing that bothered him was when the sky disappeared. As he walked along the north road, he noticed the daytime sky overhead growing less and less dark. It slowly changed from charcoal to slate gray,